Hello, everybody, and welcome. It's episode 150 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Ron, as always, joined by the man who just wants to talk to you about your car's extended warranty, Brian. Brian, how are you doing this week, sir?
I'm actually doing really well. It is it's Thursday. It is springtime. Baseball season has started. The yes. Birds have returned. The chirping noises now awaken me from my slumber. And more importantly, I'm starting to see the growings of plant life. Grass is growing. I see what seems to be the beginning of leaves growing on branches.
You're seeing this world being reborn, coming back to normal.
The sense of optimism is flowing through my body like my naturally created COVID antibodies.
Very nice. Well, you know what else is flowing this week, Brian? That's right. It's our drinks of the week.
Drink of the week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Prost.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week. Drink of the
All
week.
Right, Brian, what are you drinking this week, this beautiful spring night? What did you bring to the table? Talk to me.
From our friends in Montclair, New Jersey, comes Montclair Breweries, and this is going to be a mouthful, the Bow Beer, which is, here's the can, it's the okay. Baobab fruit, which you may not know, but it is... It is a fruit from the legendary African baobab tree. The fruit brings a lighty tropical and a unique citrus flavor and aroma that works wonders in this crisp golden ale.
I mean, it's got a nice color to it. I'm not going to lie.
The African baobab tree is referred to as the tree of life, and it is rich in vitamin C, and it's considered a super fruit. Coming in at 7.8% ABV, this golden ale can be found in 16-ounce cans.
All right.
Fruity, bitter, and from New Jersey.
I mean, except for the New Jersey part, sounds kind of like you, fruity and bitter.
Oh, God. That actually, it's not bad. It's not bad.
All right. Very good.
I'm going to give it a not bad rating. How about you?
I mean, I hope so. I seem to be. Am I frozen on your side or am I just frozen?
Not at all. You look good to me.
All right. Well, then let me get on with my drink of the week. So this week, going from Bell's Brewery out in Michigan, this is Bell's Two-Hearted Ale. And we're going to say this is an American IPA, a perfectly balanced American IPA, brewed with 100% centennial hops and bursting with aromas ranging from pine to grapefruit. It's 7%. Yes.
Were you reading that?
No, I was just admiring the can while I was getting ready to take a step.
Whole point of the drink of the week bit is that, you know, it is it's our words, our sentiments, our emotions, and that we're not reading some like pre-written script that comes from ad copy promoted by the brewer. I mean, that's lazy.
That's
lazy.
That's how I get it. So let me just take a sip of this real quick. Oh, that is good. Wow.
See, I feel like you have the better beer than I do this week.
That one is pretty tasty. I'm not going to lie. I like that one a lot.
Damn it.
Sorry, my friend. I have a ton of this. This is some of the beer that beverages2u.com sent accidentally and then never had their courier come pick the case of beer up again. So I've cracked into those now.
However, I want to say that I'm proud of you for cracking it open. But how long did you let that box sit there before feeling that it was just acceptable for you to open it?
I probably gave them a good month and a half to, and I reached out to them a couple times via email and phone. And they were like, no, we'll send somebody out. And then eventually I'm like 6 weeks later, I'm like, they're never sending anybody out to pick this up. So I was like, I'm just going to take it. I'm going to drink it. I'm going to make it mine.
The part that really gets to me about you is the contradiction. Cause you can be so like cutting and cruel with your words, yet I genuinely believe that you're a much better person than I am. Like, at your core, I think you're actually a decent person.
It's early, though. You may change your opinion before this night is done.
Well, that is a 7% beer. So I think Patreon or After Dark tonight, I think that could be quite spicy.
It's going to be a good time. In the meantime, though, we got this podcast to worry about, and it's time for This Week in Racism.
This
week
in
racism.
So we did not have a lot of stories last week, Brian, and I know you were hopeful that that meant that maybe racism was on the downswing. Unfortunately, I got two pages of racism. Actually, I had to shrink the print down to keep it on two pages. And we definitely have two areas that racism this week is falling into. We have racism against African Americans, and we have racism against Asian Americans. So I've tried to bundle the stories accordingly. So let's get into this. Starting in Virginia, during an interview on Tuesday, white Republican gubernatorial candidate Amanda Chase told an interviewer that she's never seen systemic racism. In an interview with the Spirit of VMI, a political action committee formed by alumni and others associated with Virginia Military Institute, whose stated mission is, quote, to stop the decay of VMI caused by outside legislative influence. Again, if you remember, VMI is currently under investigation for systemic racism. But Chase said, quote, I've never seen systemic racist or any of that. I think that's a created term by the left who is actually the ones that are being the racists themselves. She went on to say, I reject the notion that there is racism. In fact, if anything, I would argue that we have reverse racism that's going on in America right now. And I know this from what I've seen in employment with other, you know, instead of being able to hire the best person for the job, people are being forced to hire someone based on the color of their skin, not their credentials. In August 2020, Chase attracted national attention when she claimed during a special session of the General Assembly that she was exempt from wearing a mask due to a medical condition, which resulted in her desk being surrounded by a plexiglass shield. And she was also censured by the Virginia Senate in a bipartisan vote after she made false allegations of vote fraud in the 2020 election and expressed sympathy for the pro-Trump rioters who attacked the U.S. Capitol on January 6th.
Sounds like a classy lady.
Yes. Three black Customs and Border Protection officers have filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court alleging that CBP officers commonly target black travelers for racial profiling and harassment, and that the few black officers working customs at the border crossing between Port Huron, Michigan and Sarnia, Canada are being put in positions where they have to engage in the racist practices themselves. The Detroit Free Press reports that out of the 275 CBP officers that work at the Michigan-Canada location, only four are black, and nationwide, black people account for less than 6% of the total CBP workforce of 21,185. The CBP said they could not provide data on how many minorities versus white travelers are pulled over, but the ACLU of Michigan published findings from thousands of documents involving Border Patrol arrests CBP released last year after a five-year legal battle. The data spanning 9 years and including records of more than 13,000 stops revealed that more than 95% of those arrested by Border Patrol in Michigan are people of color. Seemingly just a little bit disproportionate to the split of population.
Yeah, that math doesn't quite add up to me.
Now, going out to Stockton, California, the family of a black teenager beaten after a traffic stop last year has filed a federal lawsuit against the city and four officers involved in the altercation. The lawsuit, which was filed Friday, says that 17-year-old Devin Carter was driving to his father's house when officers began following him in an attempt to pull him over for speeding. The teen was initially unaware that police were behind him, the suit states, and then eventually stopped and waited in his car with his hands visibly raised above the steering wheel and was then pulled from the car and slammed to the ground. Multiple officers then struck and kicked Carter, along with kneeing him repeatedly in the face. Two officers involved in the incident, Michael Stiles and Omar Villapudua, have been fired, and Police Chief Eric Jones said other officers involved have been disciplined. going down to Allen,
Texas. Tell me you're almost done.
Oh, I'm only on page one. Allen, Texas. Seven cops have been fired after a black man died while being held in jail. Marvin Scott III, 26, was arrested on March 14th at an outlet mall for marijuana possession. Officers initially took Scott to a hospital because they said he was acting erratically. After he was eventually released, he was taken to jail, where Collin County Sheriff Jim Skinner said in a news release that his erratic behavior continued. Detention officers responding by restraining him, pepper spraying him, and putting a spit mask on him. At some point during the incident, Scott lost consciousness and was later pronounced dead after he was taken to a hospital. Scott's family has said that he was schizophrenic, and it's possible that he could have been suffering from a mental health crisis. An eighth officer involved has resigned, and an investigation into Scott's death is currently being conducted by the Texas Rangers. Brian, that does wrap up racism just towards African-Americans. Now we get into the Asian-American racism segment. Again, in Texas, in Houston, an Asian woman placing her order at a drive-thru at Chick-fil-A was shocked to see her name listed on her receipt as China instead of Tina. She filled out a feedback form on the Chick-fil-A app and received an email from the GM of the restaurant, which fell short of apologizing for the incident, but did offer her a free meal for the misunderstanding. After additional follow-up, the GM stated that the employee taking the order misheard her name. Also in Texas. Well,
hold on. What when they say a free meal at Chick-fil-A, now are there limitations to that? Like, my meal may be different than Tina's. Like, Tina may just get like a 4-piece nugget and then go home.
The value meal of the sandwich, waffle fries, and drink. That's what I would consider a free meal.
Okay, next follow-up question, if you can allow me.
One more follow-up, yes.
When Tina comes home from her Chick-fil-A drive-thru order, does she also run to donate an equal dollar amount to an LGBTQ positive community organization?
I will. I'll reach out to her and find out.
Or am I the only one that does that?
You might be the only one. But we're staying in Texas, Brian, because at a political forum in Texas, GOP congressional candidate Sari Kim falsely suggested that Chinese immigrants bring the coronavirus to the U.S. and further suggested that she opposes their entry to the country. Quote, I don't want them here at all. Kim, who is Korean-American, told attendees, speaking of Chinese immigrants and China in general, quote, they steal our intellectual property, they give us coronavirus, they don't hold themselves accountable. She also argued that a rising surge in violence and threats against Asian Americans has been trumped up by the media, despite statistics showing that hate crimes against Asian Americans in 16 of America's biggest cities climbed 150% last year. Tampa Bay Buccaneers cornerback Carlton Davis tweeted and then quickly deleted an anti-Asian slur on Sunday night, prompting him to later write a second tweet to apologize. The third-year player tweeted, quote, gotta stop letting gooks in Miami. Davis deleted the tweet, then wrote another insisting he was referring to a different use of the word and didn't know it was used in a racial connotation. In a second tweet, Davis wrote, I used a term that from where I come from has always meant lame, but I did not realize it has a much darker negative connotation. I have learned a valuable lesson and want to apologize to anyone that was offended by seeing that word because we need to focus on helping each other during these tough times.
Hold up. Yes. He's claiming that the G slur means lame.
Yeah, apparently in his lingo, that's what he's saying.
I'm on Urban Dictionary and that's not even listed.
Maybe it got taken down because everyone's so woke now.
I don't think there's anything woke on Urban Dictionary. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Fair enough. Back to Texas one more time. This is in Carrollton, Texas, where students at Creek Valley Middle School were given a test recently. Students were asked to determine which of these Chinese norms are true. A, it is normal in China to cut off someone's lips if they burp in a restaurant. B, it is normal in parts of China to give children 50 lashes by cane if they steal a piece of candy. Or C, is it normal in parts of China to eat cats and dogs? The quiz question was shared on Twitter by Carrollton Creek View High School graduate Joy Lim, who said her 12-year-old sister is a middle school student in the district. The Carrollton Farmers Branch Independent School District has released a statement on its Facebook page saying that three teachers have been placed on administrative leave pending an investigation into the incident involving, quote, derogatory and hurtful language.
Now, I know that that was a multiple choice, but was there a D, all of the above?
There was not a D on that one.
Okay. What kind of fucking teacher puts that as their test question?
I mean, we went from having the slavery questions on the quizzes in February. Now it's you know, back to, I guess, Chinese-centric questions on some of these. Anyway, we're going international for this one, over to Brisbane, where an Australian restaurant owner has apologized for posting a Snapchat of an order slip that described customers as two very annoying Asians. The image appeared Saturday on the account of Shay Haston, along with the caption, OMG, I love my staff, and three laughing emojis. After being outed in the local media, Haston offered a mea culpa and said he wished, quote, to apologize for the offense and hurt caused. Coming back overseas to New York, a woman was arrested after unleashing a hateful racist diatribe against Asian workers in a lower Manhattan salon. Sharon Williams stepped into the Good Choice for Nails salon near Chinatown and started cursing out workers, yelling, "You brought coronavirus into this country." Williams was harassing another Asian pedestrian on the block when an Asian plainclothes cop began to question her. Williams called the cop a monkey, authorities said, then yelled, "You're a Chinese motherfucker who brought COVID to this country." She yelled that she was being taken into custody, according to police. She has been charged with aggravated harassment as a hate crime and criminal trespass. And our final story, also in New York, a woman speaking to a friend in Mandarin outside a Manhattan ice cream shop was slapped in the face as a surge of anti-Asian hate crimes continued to grip the city. The victim, a 25-year-old Asian woman, was seated at a sidewalk table outside an ice cream shop on Grand Street near Forsyth, near Chinatown, chatting with a friend when a woman stormed up screaming at her saying, "I don't want you talking. Shut the fuck up. Go back to where you came from. Go back to your country." The stranger started to walk away, but turned back and slapped the victim in the face before storming off. Cops have released surveillance video today in the hopes that someone recognizes the attacker.
Please tell me you're done.
I am done. I had two more that I just couldn't. But I will give you just a brief rundown where in Los Angeles, a federal magistrate has ruled in a case from 2019 that LAPD must release body cam footage of an instance where they arrested a black man, even though the suspect that they were looking for was white. And then also in Rochester, New York, there was a lawsuit filed today on behalf of the protesters for the Daniel Crude death up there at the hands of the police.
With the mask.
But this is the protesters, the treatment of the protesters. You know, the inhumane, according to the lawsuit, treatment of the protesters when arrested, but also releasing some very damning statistics as far as the treatment of protesters by the Rochester Police Department when said protesters are people of color.
Okay.
But I ran out of steam, Brian. It's so much.
I think we just spent 8 minutes on racism.
It's so much. It's too much, Brian. It's too much. I don't even know what to tell you.
It's not enough, Ron, because it's not changing the world. We thought we were going to change the world by exposing racists.
Remember 149 episodes ago when we were just a couple of starry-eyed kids thinking we could make the world a better place, thinking that we could, you know, the world would be better with Ron and Brian every week. And here we are, you know, at episode 150, and I don't know. I don't know if we've made a dent in it.
Hold on. The world is a better place because of the podcast, the show. Right. I mean, we've changed countless lives. We have brought, hours of enjoyment into households in all 46 states. We don't count the other four.
Right.
We're missing, or three we're missing?
There's two we're missing. We're still missing New Mexico and Wyoming.
Or as I like to pronounce it, Wyoming. Nope, not going to make that joke. There was a joke there. I was going to make it. If we were on After Dark, I would make the joke.
Good.
However, what I will say is the fact that we may not have made a dent in the world of racism. We may not have caused people to commit less acts of hate. However, that doesn't mean we have not succeeded in changing the world.
All right. That's a very positive attitude, and I appreciate your words.
Speaking of changing the world, I would like to point out that you are also changing your appearance.
Are you talking the deep V that I'm wearing tonight in your honor?
I'm going to tell you something. You may have a deep V, but I have a full chub.
All right.
I'm talking about your continued weight loss.
Yes.
How are we doing, Ron? And I'm going to tell you why. Because when you came on today, before the show, I visually could see that you appear to be thinner than you were a week ago.
I mean, it's down, I think, we're down almost 18 pounds now. So getting there. Slowly but surely. Sticking to the plan, Brian. Sticking to the plan.
Everybody in the chat, please congratulate Ron, because from what I have read, positive reinforcement allows people to validate the changes they're making in life.
Billy brought up a good point, though, before we move on. We did make Preeti Upala a star, so I think there is there's some benefit there.
She brought some. She definitely brought some views.
She definitely did.
I can't lie. She brought me a week of shame. I mean,
you weren't a fan, but she brought many listeners and many viewers to the table.
I genuinely was upset over how I handled myself during that interview, or lack of hope. I checked out, and that really hurt.
All right. Ron, well, you hold on before you get too ahead of yourself. You know what time it is? It's Beef of the Week time. Yeah.
Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what's bothering you this week?
All right. This is something that has very little effect on my life.
Okay.
But it has bothered me, and yesterday just kind of tipped it over. It's the extra inning rule change in Major League Baseball that they enacted last year due to COVID, which is that after a game has ended tied after nine innings, in all extra innings in each half, the batting team has a start with somebody who is, they start with a runner on second base with nobody out.
I was not aware of that they were continuing that.
They continued it, and the Yankees fucking lost yesterday because of that. The Orioles scored in the 10th and 11th inning. Yankees failed to score in the bottom of the 11th, and we lost the game to the lowly, lowly Baltimore Orioles.
Sons of bitches. Baltimore Orioles
that,
are in first place, though, right?
Beg your pardon?
Baltimore Orioles are in first place, though.
We took two out of three from them. How the hell are they in for? Oh, because they swept the Red Sox.
They were unbeaten going into that game. Mm. Anyway, but still, I get what your point. It screws with the purity of the game.
Yes, and that's what's bothering me the most.
All right, fair enough. Can I tell you my beef this week, Brian?
I would hope so.
Yes. So my beef this week is with, I guess you could say fair weather friends, let's say. And you know, I'm gonna use an example. So let's say a friend would come to me and ask for advice. Let's say financial advice, for example. And me, being the friend I am, would give them like a very killer stock pick, a stock that's, you know, selling, you know, for a penny, but it's long term going to go up very, very high. And so said friend, you know, will be happy when at some point, you know, it's like, all right, I've made five times my initial investment, so we're good. But as stocks sometimes do, they'll go down a bit. And so, oh, now I'm only sitting at three times my initial investment. So you're a piece of crap and you're dead to me. So people like that, Brian, people that fluctuate their love based on stock volume and portfolio performance and things like that. It hurts. It cuts me deep. And that's my beef of the week. Not mention any names. Right. But anyway, what is next?
Well, hold on a second. Hold on a second. Now, I don't know who you're talking about.
No, of course not.
But if I can, for a moment, because I do pride myself on being an empath. I think I used that term correctly.
You actually did, surprisingly enough.
Awesome. I would like to, for a moment, travel outside of my body into the body of somebody that would bash you when they are losing money in the stock market based on the tips that you suggested.
So you're going to kind of role play for a moment, if you will. You're not saying the words that you would say, but you're going to using your empathy skills, role play what someone might say hurtful to me about in a situation like this.
There's two types of role play that I like to do. There's this type of role play, and then there's the role play that we'll talk about later during After Dark on the Patreon portion of the show, and that's going to be very different.
Yes, and disturbing.
Okay, so very disturbing. So if we're talking about somebody who is going to hold you responsible for making stock recommendations that turn to be losing monetarily, I'm wondering if it's possible that you are so blinded by one stock in particular that has happened to have gone up, and in doing so have forgotten about the plethora of stock recommendations that you have made that are in the red right now, are in double-digit percentage losses, in some cases over 80% loss. And when questioned about it, I'm going to hypothesize that instead of admitting, hey, this was a bad call, I'm going to guess that in your maybe possible defensive nature, you would just sit there and say, oh, that's a long hold.
Listen,
like, don't worry about it now, because we're going to be holding that for about 7 years before I think that starts to pay off. So I think it's possible that maybe you're holding on to the one stock you recommended that actually has gone up in value, and you're ignoring the fact that almost all the other ones have sunk, causing maybe this person who trusted you with their money and has lost money. And, you know, maybe that's what's going on.
If I can respond to this theoretical person, there are certainly some trash stock calls that I've made that money has been lost on. And I've lost the money, too. I'm not alone. There are certain stocks that we are waiting on catalysts for, especially our pharma stocks, you know, aren't going to move until certain FDA trials have been concluded. But the vitriol that I seem to face today, again, is from a stock that had like a 600% return and dropped down to a point where it was only like a 350% return. And again, I just, it hurts. It cuts me deep. And, you know, if you cut me, do I not bleed, Brian? That's all I'm saying to this individual, whoever it may be.
You know, 3 weeks ago, if I'd cut you, I would have expected turkey gravy to come out. Now, this dare I say, hot Ron, I think you do bleed.
And this is and Billy brings up a very good point. The guy that lost $900 by investing in One Dancer is upset about a stock that didn't do well quickly. Thank you. In fact, I'm upgrading Billy to William Esquire because he is so knowledgeable about the world.
Okay. All right. Let's if we're going to make this personal, for $900, I was able to feel two breasts in my hand. Okay? With this stock that I have on multiple occasions this week lost over $1,000 on, I felt no breasts. Nothing. Well,
listen, I still have breasts. You can grab them the next time I see you.
Oh, I'm going to grab your ass. I have no interest in your man boobs. I'm all about that ass. That fat dump truck ass.
Anyway, let's go to Disney World, Brian. It's the happiest place on earth.
Can you hold on while I go get my Mickey ears?
Yeah. The happiest place on earth, with the exception of a gentleman by the name of Kelly Sills from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, had a little bit of an issue at the Florida tourist attraction. He decided to skip the temperature screening required of guests going into Disney World when he was confronted by security about it at a Disney Springs restaurant. He yelled and refused to leave. When deputies insisted he would be charged with trespassing, he pointed to how much he spent on his vacation, which was upwards of $15,000. But his legal argument was, you can't trespass me if I paid $15,000. I don't know if that is either grammatically or legally correct, because he was arrested. As it stands out, on the first night of what was to be a 5-day trip with his family, he said, however, he would have happily consented to a temperature screening, but had inadvertently walked in through an exit and not realized his error. That, however, does not excuse the fact that when the error was brought to his attention, he did not want to be temperature screened.
One time when I was married, I tried to enter in through the exit, and I also had the cops called on me.
Understood. He partly blamed the security manager for escalating the conflict and compared Disney security to Nazis and the mafia, admitted that he was in, quote, a bit of a mood after a day of travel.
I would be in a bit of a mood if I had spent $15,000 to go to fucking Disney World. Yeah.
Well, that totals from two hotel rooms, air travel, admission to Disney and Universal for 7 to 8 people. But the travel thing, you're only going from Louisiana to Florida. Like, that's not a long flight. Like, that's a 30, 45-minute flight at the most, I would think.
Maybe he's not flying. He flew?
That's what he said. It said air travel. I mean, it would be a long drive. I could see where you would fly. But so anyway, he has pleaded not guilty. Has a trial date coming up in the next couple of months.
I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I don't know if this will offend anybody watching right now, but I don't understand grown adults that go to Disney World. I just don't get it. I don't, like, to me, Disney is for kids. I get it if, like, your kid, I like the way when Ron knows that I'm about to go on to a tirade, because that's when he goes to take a sip. I love
like
it.
Like, I got time to have a drink here.
Yes. But like, I just don't get the adults that are so into Disney.
Listen, I can somewhat understand it in way of maintaining your youth. I'm more of a Universal person myself. I like the Universal theme park more than I would say Disney. I mean, I am a Disney stockholder, so I mean, I like them from that aspect. But Universal, I'm more likely to go to.
So are you recommending that we people buy Disney?
Listen, it is it's a pretty high price stonk right now. But I think if you wanted to get yourself a few shares, it's a solid investment. You know what else is hot and heavy right now, Brian?
Somebody that spent $15,000 to go to Disney World. Like, now in what he said was, he walked in through a side entrance as Ron goes to take another sip. He walked in through a side entrance, thought that it was an irregular entrance like everything else, so it wasn't manned with temperature screening and people that would remind him to wear a mask. So he just moseyed on in as he normally would. And somehow he felt that was the excuse for him not to have to wear a mask?
Apparently, you know, again, I think he's probably just an asshole and was using any excuse for it. But also on the Disney thing, also keep in mind that Disney owns Star Wars and, you know, Marvel franchises. So they've built the Star Wars section of the Disney park. And I believe they're also opening a Marvel section as well. So it appeals to a lot of different audiences, Brian.
Wait a second. You're saying that if I wanted to go to like a Star Wars World thingy, I have to go to Disney?
Yes. And now I guess like there's a whole little Marvel center there as well.
Burr, 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 burr.
So I was about to say vaccine passports are all the rage right now as to whether people will need them, if states will require them, if businesses can require them. And apparently Dr. Drew had to come out and talk about it because in a tweet posted on Monday morning, Dr. Drew argued that it would be wrong for countries to demand proof of vaccination against the novel coronavirus as a precondition for being allowed in. He wrote, "These vaccine passports segregate people and strip them of their freedom to travel internationally. Vaccinations are important, and I encourage everyone to get the COVID vaccine. But how would you feel if international travel also required other vaccinations?" It did not take long for the majority of the internet to point out to him that multiple countries already do require foreign travelers a proof of vaccination for a wide variety of diseases.
What the fuck is wrong? Okay, first off, I don't know. Okay, I know that Dr. Drew has a history.
Right.
My knowledge of Dr. Drew is that he did a sex advice call-in show on LA radio with Adam Carolla.
Yes.
He then parlayed that into a celebrity rehab show he did on VH1.
Yes, I remember that. That was...
And which I watched. I watched that show. I actually... That was... could I name one celebrity that was in rehab?
Oh, I can name one.
Brigitte Nielsen? Or was that a different show?
Well, she was on Flavor of Love, but I believe she also was on the rehab show.
Didn't they meet on the rehab show?
No, they met on Flavor Flav, and Bridgie met on Flavor of Love. And then she went on the rehab show, and that's how she met Dr. Drew.
I'm willing to bet you 1,000 LTNC shares right now that they met on the celebrity rehab show and not Flavor of Love.
It's very possible. Very possible.
Are you taking the bet?
I'm not going to take the bet because I've already taken many shares from you.
You took what? 2,000?
2,000.
Fucker. So you must have hurt over the last week over the fact that I overpaid for those shares.
Yeah, I mean, your shares are sitting on right now. So that I'm a little upset about. But what do you get? There we go. The Surreal Life. Thank you.
Surreal Life?
That was the show on VH1, The Surreal Life, where they were in the house. I think Vern Troyer was in there, Mini-Me.
Oh, yes, where he went when Mini-Me peed on the floor in the closet.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, we've all peed in the closet. So then I know nobody that was on Celebrity Rehab.
But I think she was on there. I think Vern Troyer was on. Oh, you know who was on Celebrity Rehab? Who was the young woman that was married to the guy from the Brady Bunch? The one who was on America's Top Model. Adrienne Curry?
She was married to Peter Brady.
Yes. She, I believe, was on Celebrity Rehab.
I remember her crying a lot.
Well, anyway, we've kind of gone off the rails here. But regardless of say, also...
So Dr. Drew, so I guess what I'm trying to say, if I could take it back, is that I've never viewed Dr. Drew as somebody who is an authority figure on medicine and somebody that we should be listening to as a medical leader during a fucking pandemic. And if he wants to talk to me about rehab, okay, great, maybe. But he knows nothing about this shit.
But even if you want to immigrate into the United States, you need to show that you've received vaccines for mumps, measles, rubella, polio, tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis, whatever that is. So I mean,
pertussis.
We require people to have.
I had that in the. Isn't that what I had in my taint?
I think you had it. You had a touch of the pertussis. I remember going to like Germany and Austria years ago. I needed to have a vaccine record before I could go overseas. So it's, now,
was that the Nazi anniversary tour you went on?
That was not that one. This was a separate trip. Anyway, speaking of the COVID-19 vaccine, we've got a story where a woman threatened to shoot her husband because he got the COVID vaccine. This is Carson City, Nevada, an elderly Nevada woman, 74 years old. She was nabbed by cops around 6 o'clock Saturday night after allegedly pointing a handgun at her husband. Her husband told officers his wife said she wanted to kill him for getting vaccinated. She told deputies she was opposed to the vaccine because of reported side effects. When the deputy, this is my favorite part of the story, when the deputy recited Miranda rights to the woman, she allegedly told him, quote, to shove it up his ass. Bail was set at $20,000.
I can't
wait till I get into my 70s and I can just be as much of a prick as I want to be because I'm old.
I don't think you will. I think you're too good of a person.
You know what? I feel myself getting crankier as I get older.
Like, yes, but I think
I'm much crankier at 50 than I was at 40 and significantly more than I was at 30.
You're also the person that owns a dog stroller.
I do not own a dog stroller. My wife, on the other hand, owns a dog stroller. And I was very clear to her when she wanted to buy this dog stroller last week that I will never push this dog in said dog stroller. And I have held my ground on that, my friend.
I got a video of said dog stroller with dog inside, and I was horrified by it. And listen, horrified.
I get it. We rescued this dog a couple years ago. This dog clearly never learned to walk on leash, probably lived in a crate most of her life, and so has never been able to go on a walk with us. My wife was like, oh, we're at Home Goods, and it's legit a dog stroller. It's not a baby stroller that she puts
Billy is asking for what a dog stroller is. So Ron, would you be able to put up a photo of what a dog stroller is?
I would not, because I've got the Paul Pierce video queued up, so that would screw that part up. But it basically looks like a stroller for a kid almost. It's a little bit smaller, but you set a dog into it. It has a little leash thing in there to hook onto their collar so they can't run off. And so now she can go on walks with us while my wife pushes her in the stroller.
But she's not walking.
The dog is not walking, correct.
It is just like a supermarket cart where it's got four wheels. It's got your handle. Then it's got this little enclosure with like a mesh on all four sides. So the dog can breathe in and out, but the dog isn't moving at all. So she's not really she's not walking at all.
She's not walking. Again, she won't walk on a leash. She doesn't get to, but this allows her, I guess, to get outdoors.
Get some fresh air. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. The dog already loves it. Like when the stroller comes out, the dog gets excited. She sits in the stroller. She looks around. She's happy to see humanity.
That's awesome.
But I will in my life push that dog stroller. That is my promise to you, Brian, and my promise to the viewers out there and the listeners. I will never.
You know what? I think it's possible that sometime next month I will push that baby stroller.
I will take a photo of that and I will put it on the Instagram if that happens.
It's not big enough for me to get in, is it?
Oh no. It's very size appropriate for a small Pekingese.
Okay.
I think the weight limit's like 20 some pounds on it. What else do you want to talk about this week, my friend? We've got stories all over the place. Do we want to get into Paul Pierce? Because,
well, you mentioned it, so you may as well, because now I am all about the idea of an ESPN commentator analysis.
He did basketball analysis, NBA analyst for the ESPN, was Paul Pierce, former NBA player turned analyst. Fired by ESPN due to some Instagram live videos he put out.
He threw a party.
He had a little party.
He threw a party at his house. He had a little get together. And let's face it. We are in what I would like to think as, fingers crossed, the downward slide of a global pandemic.
The end of the pandemic. We're getting.
There were a lot of people. There were a lot of people in his home. It wasn't crazy. It wasn't out of control. I would say it looked to be a gathering of about 15 people, maybe.
Right.
Some of the women were dressed rather provocatively and behaved in a manner that was similar to one would consider a stripper.
Very possibly. He was smoking something that may or may not have been marijuana.
His eyes may or may not have gotten red and glazed.
So
Paul Pierce decides after this, hey, I'm going to go on Instagram Live and just talk to my fans.
And it's a long video. Like it is, I'm going to say it's about 13, 14 minutes long.
Yes.
We talked about just mailing this episode in and just playing all 14 minutes. But instead, I pulled personally my favorite clip of the entire thing, because apparently he thought one of his fellow poker players was Jewish. So he had this exchange right here.
Hey, he skipped Shabbat. Hey, he skipped Shabbat.
I'm not fucking Jewish, bro. I told you.
Oh, he said he went Jewish. Hey, man, shout out to all the Jews for Shabbat. I wish I could Shabbat, but I'm busy right now. Shout out to all my Jewish homies. I got love, you know. I know Friday night, y'all night until, you know, it's love.
Oh, Vanessa.
I'll see y'all on Sunday.
So, number one, Brian, you are...
I'm not fucking Jewish. I love the fact that the inherent defensiveness of his friend who is offended that Paul Pierce thinks that he's Jewish. He's like, I'm not fucking Jewish.
Right. I just love how he used Shabbat as both a noun and then a verb. He's like, you know, he skipped Shabbat. And I wish I could Shabbat.
I want a Shabbat. I'm Shabbatting right now.
How one Shabbats? I don't know if that's a thing. But anyway, he will probably not be unemployed for very long. He has been approached by a couple of different porn sites to be hired as an NBA analyst. Dave Portnoy of Barstool Sports.
Yeah, he
would love to hire him. So again, I think, listen, my take on it, if ESPN was not owned by Disney, non-issue. But I'm sure the decision came from higher up than ESPN to be like, because I'm sure people at ESPN are like, great, this is fucking great, free advertising for it. And then some buzzkill at Disney was like, sorry, you gotta let this guy go.
Now, is it true that as a shareholder in Disney, you called their shareholder support phone number and filed a complaint?
I called and they were like, you own so few shares. We're going to disconnect this call right now.
But the thing is the fact that there were legit women just walking around in their underwear,
twerking
left dancing, and right,
giving massages. And listen,
I'm not offended.
We're okay with that. We are.
I wasn't offended.
Ron and Brian are supporters of any strippers, sex workers. Brian has supported strippers. Obviously, we have discussed that extensively throughout the last 150 episodes. So yeah, we are totally cool with that. But if you've got some downtime, if you've got some time to kill, I highly recommend going on YouTube, finding the Paul Pierce video watch the entire thing.
Yes.
Just my take on it.
Yeah. You know what? If this is where I genuinely do believe in the free market. If Paul Pierce is not the personality for the Disney Corporation and their subsidiaries, then I would like to think that there is somebody out there that does see a Paul Pierce and goes, I want this guy to represent my brand.
Yeah. I mean, this, again, he is not going to be unemployed for long. Regardless, I mean, he made a ton of money in the NBA. You know, former world champion, will be without a doubt voted into the Hall of Fame when he comes up for entry. But yeah,
was he whoa, he was that good?
He was. I mean, he was
Hall of Fame worthy.
Yeah, he'll be in the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Oh, I don't follow basketball close enough.
Yeah.
The only reason that I follow Paul Pierce is hoping that he throws another house party.
I mean, we would love, I mean, if Paul Pierce is listening, and yeah, safe to say he might be, we would love to be at the next Paul Pierce poker game.
Of course.
So, did I tell you I won the home game I played this past Friday night?
No.
I mean, it was a virtual home game. I would have invited you to play, but it was done through Poker Stars, so you had to be living in the state of Pennsylvania. But I beat like nine other guys to win.
And what were you playing?
Hold'em, five card, Texas Hold'em.
Everything was five card?
Yes.
You played up against nine people?
10 people. It was 11.
Ten people. What was the buy-in?
It was a $20 buy-in.
How much did you walk away with?
I walked away with $220. It was winner take all, so I made $200 that night.
Ooh, so you can definitely afford. You can definitely afford rough and rowdy 20 on the Friday, April 23rd, later on this month, pay-per-view boxing, no masks, no headgear.
Taking place in Morgantown, West Virginia, which we have a great affinity with, the meth lab capital of West Virginia, that is Morgantown.
Doesn't your hotel have a... I'm not allowed to say that?
We're not allowed to talk about that now.
Can we talk about that in 40 minutes?
Possibly. When we go to After Dark, which if you are a Patreon subscriber, you know at 9:30.
Put the link up.
We do Ron and Brian After Dark for our Patreon subscribers. You go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. You click in the upper right-hand corner to become a patron. Bronze level or higher gets access to the live show, which will take place right after this one. You know what else we love besides sports, besides rough and rowdy? We love
Jewish women,
that too, but we love eating contests. We have wagered often on the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. We have discussed eating contests in the past.
I keep losing money on it.
Yes. However, come to find that eating contests can sometimes turn tragic. And that is what this is what happened back in 2019. Apparently, there is a minor league baseball team out in California called the Fresno Grizzlies. They were holding an amateur taco eating competition at Chuck Chansey Park. And a gentleman by the name of Dana Hutchings participated in said taco eating contest, which obviously... you try to eat as many tacos as you can. Dana apparently began to choke on chewed and unchewed taco remnants. Apparently, people tried to save him with CPR and a defibrillator. And then paramedics rushed Dana to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. Well, now his son is suing the parent company, Fresno Sports and Events, saying that they were not equipped to handle an eating contest with novices, because professional food eating is a serious business and requires preparation and training, and it ended up costing a life. Hutchins is suing for wrongful death and is asking a judge to award him major damages. Fresno Sports has had no comment.
Did they say what kind of tacos?
They did not. I would have to imagine you're probably looking at hard shell, because a hard shell taco will fucking kill you.
What about a fish taco?
That I do not know. Who are these people? What else we got this week?
Oh, hold on. I meant you Seinfeld.
Who are these people?
My mind was blown this week on the internet, and I know you're not prepared for this because I failed to put it on the Google Doc. But somebody with some type of architectural rendering software mapped out Jerry Seinfeld's apartment in Seinfeld.
Okay.
And they proved that the hallway outside of his apartment, as shown in the TV show over multiple seasons, could not exist based on the layout of Jerry's apartment.
Well, it did seem kind of weird because so you had the doors to his apartment and Kramer's
comes
apartment
out at an angle, hall, yes,
and then
right
you
across
the wall right there at the end of the hallway next
straight
to the door
down.
However, if you go into Jerry's apartment, he then
yes
back area where there was a bedroom and a bathroom.
But the hallway
stopped
would have
door.
Cut right
door.
But it would have cut right into his kitchen. There's no way his kitchen could have been as
right.
deep.
Because the kitchen went back away from the door.
Yes.
And away from the door. Back and away from the door. Sorry.
You just gave me a JFK. But it blew my mind that I had watched that show 30 years.
Right.
And at no point did I ever sit there and say, wait a second, there's no way that kitchen could exist with that hallway.
Yeah, you just don't think about it. Are you watching anything else? I mean, I guess if I were to phrase that another way, what are you watching, Brian?
All right, this week, I didn't really watch a lot. I'm not going to lie to you. What I did watch was the NCAA Men's College Basketball Tournament.
Yep.
Why do you look pained when I said that? Was it because I watched the men's and not the women's?
No. I am pained because I was in first place in the March Madness pool, and I needed Houston to knock off Baylor in the Final Four, and that clearly did not happen. So I finished out of the money.
If it makes you feel any better, I won $350 off of my friend who I gamble on every sporting event with.
Love it. Made money.
I won $350 in the final three rounds of that tournament. So I watched both games on Saturday. Did I watch both games Saturday? Oh, yeah, because I had cleared my schedule on Saturday. I did not make any activities this past Saturday, not because of any type of activity that took place the day before.
No.
Wang.
But I watched both games on Saturday. I watched the game on Monday. So I did watch a lot of college basketball this week, as well as I finished watching on HBO Max the show Flight Attendant, starring the girl from that show.
Yes, Kaylee Cuoco, something like that.
The name's a little weird. I don't know. Cuomo. Kaylee Cuomo. Niece of New York's governor.
Mm. Yes, obviously.
We love you. We love you, Mario. I watched it, enjoyed it, thought it was good. Had some plot line directions that I did not quite understand. Maybe somebody who understands it better would be able to explain it to me. Otherwise, enjoyed it, liked it, better than I expected, but could have been better. Ron, can I ask you a question?
You may, of course.
What are you watching?
Well, you know, finally finished Counterpart, so I was able to actually watch a lot this week. I watched, of course, the blockbuster release Godzilla versus Kong, the latest in the MonsterVerse that was showing on HBO Max. And going into this, I have to say, yes, you're calling time out. Talk to me.
What is a MonsterVerse?
Well, so basically it's like there's been a couple of Godzillas. There's been Kong Skull Island. And again, I'm a fan of the Kong movies. I'm a fan of the Godzilla movies. So I feel I need to tell you up front that before I talk about Godzilla versus Kong, which I have to say was god awful.
Oh, Godzilla was god awful.
I did not like it at all. It seemed like they smashed two or three movies into one. A lot of just bad CGI. I did not like it. I cannot recommend it. What I can recommend, and I was shocked because when I saw the previews, I did not think I would like it. I watched it. It was an excellent movie. It's on Netflix. It's a movie called Concrete Cowboys. It stars Idris Elba, Caleb McLaughlin from Stranger Things. Method Man is in there. And it is about the black cowboys of Philadelphia, which I did not even realize was a thing. The movie is set, I think, about 20 years ago, but apparently there was a group of, you know, people of guys and women that living in Philadelphia that own horses, that kept horses, that consider themselves cowboys. There apparently are still people in Philadelphia because they've started a GoFundMe to help them raise money. this was a very good movie. Like it was educational. It was well acted. It was well done. Again, I watched the previews. I was like, I'm not going to like this. My wife put it on. I'm like, all right, I'll sit here with you. It turns out really blew me away with how good it was.
Okay. They're African Americans.
Correct.
They like to ride horses.
They ride horses. They keep horses. They have horses in their city.
And they live in Philadelphia.
They live in Philadelphia, yes.
What is the plot of the movie? Like, you just named me three facts, but like, what's enough to keep your interest for an hour?
The plot of the movie is that, so Kayla McLachlan is, he lives in Detroit with his mom. He's getting in trouble. He's getting into fights. He gets kicked out of school. So she drives him from Detroit to Philly to drop him off with Idris Elba, who is his father. And, you know, he finds out his dad.
Stringer Bell.
He finds that his dad, you know, has these horses, is involved with these stables, and it's, you know, it's a growing, a teachable moment for him throughout the film. So he learns about himself, he learns about his dad, he learns about how gentrification is ruining the way of life for these folks. You know, they're getting, a lot of these stables have been pushed out of parts of the city. So it was just well done. It was well acted. It was well written. It was shot well.
It's about a kid who's going off the straight and narrow, and then he gets brought to meet his to spend time with his father, who brings him back through the art of riding horses
learning how to take care of horses, and, you know, taming a horse and riding and everything else. It's just very well done. I would recommend it.
Okay.
I did also watch a couple of documentaries. I watched the last Blockbuster, which, as you can imagine, it's about the last Blockbuster video store in the country. The first hour was very good, and then
didn't I talk about that last week, or was I too drunk to forget? I forgot that I talked about it.
Yeah, I don't know if you talked about it.
Oh, I watched it 2 weeks ago. That was on my list of things that I watched last week. Right.
I thought the first hour was good, and then I paused it, and I'm like, how do they have another half hour to go still?
How did it end? Because I only watched like the first hour, and I didn't like it whatsoever.
I didn't watch past the first hour. I didn't watch the last half hour, because I'm like, all right, we're down to the last Blockbuster. We get it.
I feel, okay, so it's Oregon?
Bend, Oregon is where the last...
Oregon. Brian
forgot how to properly pronounce Oregon, and he thinks that it should be pronounced Oregon.
Oregon.
But there's like one legitimate Blockbuster, or that, I mean, it's not part of the conglomerate. It doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
But it's about... And what I felt was they split it in half. One of it was like, we want to teach the younger generation what it was as a cultural institution going to a video store to rent a movie in the 80s.
Right.
Meanwhile, they also intersperse that with a storyline of there's actually a Blockbuster in
Oregon.
And initially there were three in Alaska and one in Oregon. And
so you just pronounced it Oregon.
The three in Alaska.
But I get shit for it.
The three in Alaska end up closing during the years that they filmed this documentary. And then the Bend, Oregon one is the one that ends up being the last.
Now, I found the plot line of the actual last store to be of zero interest to me. I could care less that this woman is buying up these like random odd computers so that she can salvage parts so that she can still maintain the old Blockbuster tracking system of availability of movies and who has what and whatnot. I could care less about that. I could care less about the people that were like, oh, no, I still go here because it's fun to use my Blockbuster. I actually thought it was really interesting talking to people who are in some ways Hollywood celebrities, in some ways just regular people, talking about what it was like on a Saturday evening in America in, you know, the late 80s to be like, what are we going to do tonight? Let's rent a movie. And then you would all as a group go to Blockbuster. And what was that experience like? Because right. It doesn't exist anymore. Now we all have Netflix. We have Hulu. We have Disney Plus. We have Paramount. We have Peacock. We have ESPN Plus.
We have the Disney Channel.
We've got AMC. We've got Amazon Prime. What?
Yeah, we get it. We have a number of apps, yes.
But the idea is we don't have to leave the house for any of this. We now just have all this. We have hours of entertainment that's basically being bombarded to us if we choose to watch it. Well, back then it was you had to go out of your way to find all that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, the different sensations of, like, you know, walking into a Blockbuster and having 80 copies of the new Tom Cruise movie. But if you were looking for a specific horror movie, they'd never heard of it. It wasn't, you know, the selection. You know, they didn't have any porn.
Not that I was interested in that. You know, I may have family watching.
Well, so that was, so again, that was hit or miss. One thing I did like that I didn't think I would like would be Operation Varsity Blues, about the college admission scandal on Netflix.
Oh, you did watch that.
I did watch that. And part of the reason I didn't think I was going to like it, it was that documentary type where they get actors to play the roles of the people involved in the documentary.
Not a fan of that.
So like Matthew Modine was the head guy. He was Rick Singer. And they had a bunch of other actors playing the other parts.
They
and
got they, Matthew Modine.
They got Modine. It was a big get. And they recreated. Wow. They used the tapes that the FBI had made. They used the audio of those tapes to recreate all of these things.
Right.
And it was surprisingly good. And what when you watch it, like if you were pissed off at people when this college admission scandal first came out.
If I remember correctly, you were pissed off.
And there were a lot of people.
I remember I took the stance of rich people have been scheming the system for forever. Why would I think it is?
If you were pissed off at the likes of Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin.
Guilty.
When you watch and you hear the words, the conversations that they were having, you will be even more pissed off.
Really?
You will be like, how did these people even attempt to defend themselves and say that they didn't know that this was wrong?
Question.
Yes.
The rage that I will feel over the fact of these Hollywood celebrities blatantly spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to cheat to get their children into B Stanford. Level. Yeah.
No, these are high level universities. Harvard, yeah.
That level of rage. That level of rage that I will feel. How does that compare to the level of rage I feel when I see that Labor Smart stock is down 10% in a day?
It's going to be more than that. It's going to be above the Labor Smart rage. And the documentary actually makes you feel bad for the coach of the sailing team at Stanford, because here's a guy who literally did not make any money off of this at all, but the university got all these donations from Rick Singer for the sailing program. The coach made not a single dime off of it, but the coach loses his job and ends up under house arrest and probation for 2 years. So he is, I think,
the
lone sympathetic character. And you just are like, holy shit, these rich people were even shittier than we even thought when you really listen to these conversations. Yeah. So definitely worth checking out.
Okay. That's good.
Anything else we got this week, Brian? Anything you want to
talk about? You forgot to have our Stonks update.
A Stonks update? What do you mean, a Stonks update?
Stonks.
I think as we discussed earlier, it's been a rough couple of days for our stock that we love, Labor Smart, closing, what was it, about 6.5 cents today? down from a high of 8.5 cents earlier this week.
Oh, it hit 8.75 at one point midday.
But still up from the penny when we told everybody to buy. So,
well, not all of us bought at that moment. You know, you came in with a large investment all at once.
I did, yeah.
Some of us, I actually think we should actually do is compare how much money we've actually invested. I think that you and I have bought about the same dollar amount that we've invested, the same dollar amount. And I think you have about three times the number of shares than I do.
We can discuss. I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily a topic for this episode necessarily. But the fact is,
Ron, is that this stock hit about 8.75 cents this week. And in midday training today was at about 5.5.
It dropped down significantly, but then it rallied a bit towards the end and got up towards like 6.5 cents. So that's where we're at. And hopefully we will have a good day tomorrow. You know, the stock market won't be closed for anything foolish like Good Friday or anything like that.
And you want to know something? I've learned, because I'm trying to be a better person. Mm-hmm. If the stock has another rough day tomorrow, I will not take it out on you.
That's fair. That seems fair to me. All right. Anything else? Or do we want to kind of get out of here, take a little break before After Dark, exclusive for our Patreon friends?
I would like to change my shirt because I've sweated through this.
Understood. It's a warm day today, so I could see where that would happen. Is that Yankee Stadium on your shirt?
Oh, you know it, buddy.
Yankee
Stadium seating chart. Can't wait. I am going April 20th, Tuesday. Anybody wants to go with me, let me know. Nice. I've got a couple of extra tickets.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank all of you for joining us this week. For our Patreon subscribers, we will see you shortly on After Dark. Brian, do you have anything additional to chime in with this week?
Wu-Tang is for the children.
As we know. All right, let me see. My computer's doing that crazy thing again where my screen's frozen. Let me see if I can.
Yeah, you froze a couple times.
I froze a couple times. Let me see if
and
I can.
Now I'm hearing myself echo. So that's a definite sign we need to end this shit.
Let me see if I can get the exit video to work.